seen at the beginning of the service. The first is that Pastor Rudd's class is beginning, had its first week this last Wednesday night, and he'll probably let you in on the second week if you'd like to come. But after that, we'll quit announcing it. The class will be closed. I also want to let you know of the ladies' luncheon that's coming up. It's the Widow's Mite is hosting a luncheon for all the single ladies. All the single ladies. And in fact, one of them is going to be giving a short... how to get a ring on it. No, I'm just... That'd be great, though, wouldn't it? That would be a real selling point. Johnsons are having a shower today at 4 to 5:30. Chris and Jacqueline here in the fellowship hall. Also, we have about 10 spots open in the bowling league that starts in February. Sort of an ongoing bowling league. And we let folks who had been in the bowling league last time have first dibs on the spots, but you only have like 40 spots. So we have a few spots open if you want to be in the league. Get with me after the service. They'll fill up really quick. Also, a volleyball clinic is coming up in February, February 11th, led by our own Sarah Aiken. Last week I said 5 to 8 year olds. What I meant to say was 5 to 8, 5th to 8th grade. 5th to 8th grade. All right. God bless you. Hey, this is Sanctity of Life Sunday. And I want to speak on that subject because we believe as a church, I think, I know that I believe that all life is precious in and out of the womb. It's precious because of the verses that we just heard. And it's precious because, again, you and I are created by God. And I think we ought to say that because it's not a political statement to say that we are pro-life. It is a biblical statement. And if people in our society can advocate for abortion in the third term, we can advocate for the preservation of life in any term. If, as an actress did, Michelle Williams, if she can get up at the Golden Globes a few years ago and say that she would not have had the success she had as an actress if she had not had an abortion, I think that I can thank my mother for not having an abortion. I've had some success in life because somebody didn't have an abortion. And I think we ought to say that. If a governor in a nearby state can say that there isn't a problem killing a child 5 minutes after it's born, you and I ought to again be able to say all life is valuable and precious to God. And people say, well, what about all the exceptions? Well, you know, you think about the exceptions that are commonly listed, the health of the mother, the mental health of the mother, the whether a child is disabled, that gets thrown in. I don't know always why that would get thrown in, but it gets thrown in. You throw in rape and incest. You throw in all of those exceptions. There was a study done that looked at 2.4 million abortions between 1996 and 2010 in 7 states. It found that all the exceptions, all of those things that we think about as possible causes for abortion, some people think about, account for 3.5% of the abortions. 96.5% of abortions in America are done at the for the sake of the convenience of the mother as a form of birth control. And I hope that we can at least agree on the 96.5% that that's wrong, that that's a sin, that that's not what God has called us to do, even if we debate the 3.5%. Again, abortion is not the unforgivable sin. God forgives abortion, but it is a sin. And it's not the biggest sin, but it is a sin. And as Christians, we ought to be against sin, which makes us pro-life. And so I think that that's where you and I ought to stand. And to drive that home, I want to deal with the bigger issue that Christians hold, which is that everyone, every human is created in the image of God. And I want to use as a text just for some comments today, Genesis 9:6. The Bible says, whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For he is in the image of God, he made man. Now hold that verse there, if you will, for a few minutes, Bill. The Bible says that man is made in the image of God. Man and women, humankind, are made in the image of God. Now, the context of that passage is Noah coming off the ark. Noah comes off the ark with all the animals that he preserved. And so God is giving him instruction about the world that is to come. And he says, Noah, you can eat all the animals now. The fish you can eat, the birds you can eat, everything in the field you can eat. But man, whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. Because man's different than the animals. He is in the image of God. Now, you might say, well, in the context, actually, that is forbidding, because it's talking about what you eat. So actually, that's forbidding cannibalism. And if you're looking for a church that's pro-cannibalism, you're in the wrong church. Go find you a liberal preacher who's pro-cannibalism. But we're not pro-cannibal around here. But that's not what the text is saying. It's not a text about cannibalism. Because the principle is bigger. It's saying whoever sheds man's blood, it's talking about killing a person. Not talking about eating a person. Although the other verses were talking about eating animals. Because man is in the image of God. Now notice the addressing there of what some see as a contradiction. Some say, how can you be pro-life but pro-death penalty? That seems like a contradiction, but notice, he says, because a man's or woman's life is so valuable, if you kill it, your life will be held in account, because the only thing that, seriousness of killing a person warrants the death penalty. That's how valuable a life is. So if you kill a person, you're worthy of the death penalty, is what he's saying. Because again, a person is created in the image of God. Now, what does it mean to be created in the image of God? And there's five components to that. The first is that you and I are created intellectual. We're intellectual beings. Most of us are intellectual beings. Several of us are intellectual beings. Psalm 32, verse 9 says that we ought not be like the horses or the mules that have to be guided with a bridle in their mouth. You and I are intellectual beings. Now, there are animals that have been taught quite a lot. There are animals that have been well trained. And so you think about bears who've been taught to ride bicycles, and you think about lions there at the circus and the things the lions can do. You think about elephants who can sit on or stand on little tables. You think about the birds. You think about pigeons who are trained to take messages and bring them back. You think about the eagles and the falcons who can fly up in the air and then come back to the gauntlet that their master is wearing. You think about dolphins and the tricks that dolphins have been taught. Pliny the Elder, who was a Roman emperor, actually trained fish to hear their name. He could call into his pond the names of the fish, and they would come up individually and eat from his hand. It's amazing what animals have been trained to do. But animals aren't humans. You send an animal to school, it's going to flunk geometry just as sure as the world. You send an animal to school, it's not going to be able to write a paper. It can't write a history paper. It's not going to do very well in the computer classes. An animal, you don't want to sit in the back seat if an animal's driving your car. It's not going to pilot a plane. There are extreme limitations to the intellect of animals. And you may say, well, listen, you got no idea about my dog. My dog is brilliant. Well, there are animals that are smarter than other animals. That is to be true. You know, I make fun of cats, but I actually come from a place of pain in my heart. I actually had a cat that I loved dearly. best animal we ever had. And his name was Tom. Real creative name. He was a tomcat. We called him Tom. He was a stray. He showed up at my sister's house. Her husband raised pit bulls, and they went out one day, and he was sleeping in the barrel with a pit bull. And so they gave him to us. And he was a wonderful animal. He liked to lay in the bushes along the sidewalk and grab my brother's leg late at night when he was coming back from a party. Just reach out and get him. And he seemed to take some satisfaction in those kinds of things. He was just this strong cat. We didn't have a dog, so we lived in this neighborhood. Everybody else had dogs that would lay in the yards. They sort of knew their territory, and we had a cat laying there, and he knew his territory. And he would defend it. I saw him. There was a dog that cut through his yard and came around the garage. It was a neighbor's dog. It was it had a Cocker Spaniel head on it, but it had really long legs. It was like half Cocker Spaniel, half sneaky neighbor dog or something. And so he came around the garage, and Tom wasn't having it. He jumped on his back and rode him a good 50 feet across the yard. The dog didn't cross his territory again. I remember playing in the sandbox with him, and he was sitting over there. We weren't playing. He was sitting there, and I was sitting there. And I threw sand at him. I don't know why I threw sand at him. And he looked at me and stared me down and then jumped and clawed the arm that I threw the sand with. He didn't like the disrespect. And he's the only animal in our family that's buried with dignity. There is still in my parents' courtyard a little grave with his tombstone there. All the others are buried out of the courtyard. He's buried in the courtyard. And he's a great cat. I wish I had a picture of him to show our current cat what a real cat looks like. But he wouldn't understand. He's just a cat. And you can have animals like that. But they aren't human in intellect. Humans are intellectual. And humans are creative. They're creative. You put a dog in the backyard and you go back, he's not going to build his own house. He's not going to plant a garden. Not going to plant flowers. A dog does not have a creative ability. And they don't have, as far as I can tell, the ability to appreciate any creation either. They don't appreciate beauty. So that's the third thing. They're not creative. God's creative. You and I are creative. I mean, human beings build houses, plant gardens, sow vineyards. We can look at the things that humans can imagine and build. Think about what chefs can do. Boy, I'm really hungry. Think about what a chef can do. But animals don't do that. And partially connected is that they don't appreciate beauty, whereas humans can appreciate beauty. I mean, we travel places and we look at the mountains and we look at the stars and we look at people and, man, we can appreciate beauty, but animals can't appreciate beauty. I mean, you take your dog to the museum, if you can get him to quit sniffing his rump for 2 minutes to look at the picture, he won't appreciate it. I mean, I've seen people build really nice dog houses. Oh, that's for you. That's not for the dog. Now, dog don't care what color it is. He don't care about those plastic little flowers you put in the windowsill for him. He don't care about that because he don't appreciate stuff like that. I mean, you see these commercials and it's like fancy feast. You get the silver out and you put the cat food on it. I mean, come on, that cat don't appreciate that. I mean, haven't you seen what that cat eats? Haven't you seen the mice and the moles he drags in? It don't appreciate the silver. But humans are intellectual. Humans are creative. They're able to appreciate beauty. Humans are moral beings. I mean, animals for the most part, and there are exceptions. I don't want to hear about your dog after this service. I know there are exceptions, but animals tend to run on natural instinct. And that's why, you know, if you got a cat, we had a cat, and it wasn't a bad cat. It came back, and it had a little baby bunny rabbit it killed. That's a cat for you, though. I mean, you can't get mad at the cat. That's the instinct of the cat. Dogs roam. I mean, animals do what they do. They're driven by natural instinct. They're non-moral beings. But humans are moral beings. We have the ability to discern right and wrong morally. And that's why we can't be driven by instinct. I mean, listen, you're a moral being. You know what's right. You know what's wrong. You say, well, I feel that. Yeah, but you still can't sleep with everybody in the neighborhood. You're not a tomcat man. You can't do that. You say, well, I feel drawn in this direction. Yeah, you can say no. You're a moral being. You say, well, I have this attraction. You can say no to the attraction. You're a moral being. Yeah, you say, well, I just want to eat everything I see. You're not a dog. You can leave something in the bowl. You're a moral being. See, you and I are moral. And while we have a, in many ways, an animalistic nature, we were created to rule over our animalistic nature in the power of God. We're created in His image. Not only are we intellectual and creative, appreciators of beauty, not only are we moral, but we're spiritual beings too. That's a deep concept, to be a spiritual being. But it means so much more than this, but at least what it means is most of who we are is unseen. There's the physical, there's the spiritual, and again, there are depths here that you can't get into in this moment. But it means that you and I are icebergs, so to speak, and people see very little of who we are. Who we are remains largely unseen. Whereas an animal is largely not a spiritual being, and who they are, what you see is largely who they are. And that's why an animal, if you give them a good house, and you give them food, and you give them a nice place to sleep, they seem to be pretty satisfied as long as you pet them now and then. But a human being can't be satisfied with the house and the food and the things that can be seen. A human being is a spiritual being. You can't be happy if you have no purpose, if you don't feel appreciated, if your relationships are messed up, if they're fouled up. You can't be happy if you feel like you're not accomplishing anything in life. That's why you can never really medicate yourself to happiness. I mean, you can medicate yourself to some degree out of depression. You can medicate yourself from hurting so badly. But medication is for the physical body. And medication doesn't fix the spiritual issue. I mean, medicine isn't going to fix your fear of death, your lack of purpose. It's not going to fix entirely the relationship that's broken. It's not going to make you feel more accepted than you are. You are a spiritual being, and so there has to be a spiritual answer to your unhappiness. That's why you're at church this morning. Some of you are. We are, again, superior to the animals. In fact, 1 Corinthians 15, Paul's talking about the resurrection, and he says this: all flesh is not the same flesh. There's one kind of flesh of man, another flesh of animals, another of fish, another of birds. Men are created, women are created in the image of God. Now, let me say this. I think that the preservation of animals is important. If I'm out fishing at the beach and somebody were to say, hey, you got to move on. This is where the turtle legs are laid. I'll move on. I'm all for the turtle legs. If I'm out west and somebody says you can't be there because that's where the great spotted owl lays their eggs, I'm for the spotted owl. Great. When we go out west, I love to see the herds of buffalo running. I hope nobody eats those buffalo. I like to see them. They're great. And so I'm for the animals. I think it's a moral problem if you don't take care of your animals. In fact, I'm going to tell you what a heart of gold I got. I was visiting somebody several years ago. I was working for a mental health company, and I was 75 miles away visiting this house that where this young man stayed, was being cared for. And I went up there, and there was this dog, and he was an ugly dog. He looked like a wiener dog with a minion stuck on him like a head. I mean, this guy was generations of sneaky neighbor dogs breeding with sneaky neighbor dogs. There wasn't a purebred in his history. And so ugly, but he was chained up, and he was near a little tree. But it was just like a little tree. It was like that tall. He couldn't, there weren't any leaves on that tree. It was in the middle of summer. And I went in there and asked them to let me have that dog. Next day, I drove 75 miles back with a laundry basket, stuck them in there, stuck them in my back seat, and we went home. I think it's a terrible thing to do that to animals. I think if you can't care for one, you ought not have one. And I think that's biblical. In fact, I think animals will be in heaven, but not because they accepted Jesus as their Savior. They're not smart enough for that. But I think that when you get to Revelation chapter 22, my understanding is God is the final product of the creation. The final chapter is not just the reign of Christ, but the restoration of Eden itself. I think that's the full circle. Eden falls in Genesis. Eden is finally resurrected. Eden is reclaimed. Whether that's on earth or heaven or both, I don't know. I'm of the opinion there's a blending of heaven and earth there. But I think ultimately we're destined for the garden again. That's our original home. I think it's a large garden. I think it'll take over the world. And so what I'm saying is that there were animals in the garden. And I think in the original situation, animals weren't part of the fall. Quite frankly, if I'm in heaven, I'd like to have some fish to eat. So there's that. But I think there'll be animals in heaven. Not because they're moral beings. So I don't think this is a case to be mad or angry at animals. But I'm saying as much as we care about animals, we ought to care 100 times more about human beings. And when you live in a nation that will protect the eggs of the turtle and the eggs of the owl, but not unborn children, you live in a messed up nation. In fact, one of the great contradictions, someone said, is that in the same hospital, you can have a baby born 2 months early and they're fighting like the devil to save it. And over here, you can have a baby 8 months into the pregnancy and they're killing it in the same hospital in America. All depends what the parent wants. You can save it or you can kill it. It's viable in both situations. I think that is a messed up place to be. And so, you and I are created in the image of God. Now let me, 10 minutes, give you some implications of that. The first is that there is a cultural implication. There's a cultural implication. One of the things that people point out when they look at the Bible, which is in the context, the New Testament's in the context of the Roman Empire, is this. How can a culture like the Roman Empire, which is so inclusive, be so violent at the same time? Because you look at the Roman Empire, there's at least 18 different nationalities at Pentecost. So it was a very multicultural place. They didn't care who you slept with. 19 out of 20 Roman emperors for a period of about 250 years were either homosexual or bisexual. That was all during the time the New Testament was written. They didn't care who you slept with. They didn't care what you worshipped, so long as once a year you take a little pinch of something or another and you say Caesar is Lord, you can worship anything else you want to do after that. They didn't care who you slept with, what you did, who you did it with, what you worshiped. They didn't care who you were. And yet, they didn't just practice abortion. They practiced infanticide. You put the girl out on the doorstep and you let her die if you didn't want a girl. They would sit for entertainment and they would watch people kill other people in the Colosseum in gladiatory fights. Or may not have said that, right? Gladiator fights. They liked to watch people get eaten. They were an extremely violent, oppressive culture. You had 60 million slaves in the Roman Empire. How can you be so inclusive and so diverse and so violent? We're finding that out in our nation, aren't we? I mean, we are far more inclusive now than we were 50 years ago. And we're a rainbow nation now. We don't care who you sleep with. We don't care who you worship. We don't care what you do. We're inclusive about everything. And it's true that 50 years ago, you didn't have gay pride marches. But 50 years ago, you didn't have school shootings either. I mean, it's true that 50 years ago, you didn't have gay marriage. But it's also true 50 years ago, you didn't have politicians talking about infanticide. How can a culture become more inclusive, more diverse, and far more violent at the same time? It doesn't make sense. Unless you understand that to become inclusive and diverse, you have to eliminate God from the center of the culture. And when you lose God, you lose the consciousness that people are created in the image of God. If by becoming diverse, you lose the fact that there is a God and that you and I are infinitely valuable because we were created by that God, you are destined to be a more violent culture. This has cultural implications. It has neighborhood implications. It's interesting again, and I've mentioned this quite a lot, when James chapter 3 says you ought not gossip, he appeals to the fact that you are created and we are created in the image of God. And he draws that fabulous analogy where he says, if you heap praise on God but curse his image, then the praise to God wasn't legitimate. And what he's driving at is that if you go again into a throne room and you see a king and you tell the king how wonderful he is, but on the way out you spit on a picture of the king, it calls into question whether your praise was legitimate or not. And so James is saying, you ought not gossip or attack human beings because they're the picture of God. And when you do that, it negates the worship of God. Cunning argument that he has. There's a place in Matthew chapter 5 where Jesus is talking about what you say, and you ought not call anybody rock or fool. The Jewish people of that day had a very clear demarcation, a line of demarcation about how you could and could not criticize a person. You could criticize them if it was their fault. You could not criticize them if it was part of their creation, because that would be critical of their creator. So you could call somebody ignorant, but you couldn't call them a fool. The ignorance is that they could have learned it, but they didn't learn it. That's their fault. Fool implies that they are mentally unable. That's an attack on their creator. You couldn't make fun of a man for being bald, because he didn't have any doing in his baldness. That's the way he was created. But you could criticize a woman for her hairstyle. That's her doing. That's her mistake. You could criticize a person for their choice of clothing. That was their decision. But you couldn't call them ugly. That was their creator's decision. In fact, the Simon Eleazar was a first century rabbi, and somebody came up to him one day, this is a fable, and called him ugly on the street. They said, "You're so ugly, rabbi." And the rabbi says, "Why don't you go to my creator and tell him he created an ugly thing in his creation?" I think you feel that, don't you? It changes how you treat people at the core when you understand we're all created in the image of God. It has cultural implications. It has neighborhood implications. It has personal implications. I'm not going to drive that, but I think that you're getting that. You're valuable to God. Doesn't matter what you've done, you're valuable to God. You're in His image. You're somebody that He sent His Son to redeem. He cares about you. And you have innate valuable. You're not a fish. You're not an animal. You're not a dog. You're infinitely valuable to Him. In fact, there's a place in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus is speaking. Matthew's in the New Testament, isn't it? I was at a, when I was a kid, I went to this church to visit, and they had a Bible trivia competition, and the preacher hadn't been there but a few months, and he got up on stage and didn't know any of the answers. You could see the people, uh-oh, we hired a guy that didn't know the Bible. this is bad. Listen to Matthew chapter 10, verse 29. This is Jesus. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. So He's saying, my Father sees the creation. He sees the animals. Even the sparrows He sees. But the very hairs on your head are all numbered. You say, I got a wig. Well, He's got the number on the wig too. All the hair on your head, real or unreal, it's numbered. Verse 31, do not fear. Therefore, you said, I'm afraid. I'm living in fear. I don't know what's going to happen. Jesus says, don't fear. You are more valuable than many sparrows. There's value in you. There's value in you. So it has personal implications. And because it has personal implications, it has future implications. If you try to live in a way you weren't created, you're destined for great failure. If a horse tries to live like a fish, it's going to die. If a fish tries to live like a bird, it's going to die. If a bird tries to live like a fish, it's going to die. You have to live within the context of how you were created to be. And you and I are created in the image of God. You and I, in fact, 1 John chapter 3 says, we don't know what we will be, but when He appears, we shall be like Him. The end result of you and I is that our image, our fallenness, will once again be restored in the image of the Father, in the image of Christ. We are created in the image of God. And you're going to break yourself if you try to operate in any naturalistic limitation. You're not a dog, not a cat, you're not an animal. Your main identity is not an athlete. It's not a beauty queen. It's not a student. It's not a parent. Your main identity is that I have been created in the image of God, and therefore He cares for me. Cares for me. Will you stand with me? Jesus Christ didn't come for the animal kingdom. He came for you and I. If you have a need today, He cares for you. Got to believe that. Like Jesus said, we read it, don't fear, because you are more valuable than many sparrows. It's the understatement of the day. You're more valuable than all the sparrows. If you have a need, then you have a Savior. If you have a burden, you have a burden carrier. There's sin in your life, you have a sin forgiver. His name is Jesus Christ. And I want to invite you to come as we worship here for a few minutes. If you have a burden, you come. If you have a broken heart, you come. If you're lost, you come. If you want to be anointed, we'll be here. We'll anoint those who are hurting in their body and pray that the Lord will heal you. You are valuable to God, being created in His image.